From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents A Conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for August 14th, 2016. Another great summer weekend. Go grab your Sunday paper, pour that cup of coffee, and we're off and running to the start of a great week. Well, Dave, it's so good to have you back. Missed you last Sunday.
Good to be back, Rick. Good morning.
Good morning, and I bet you had a great time last weekend seeing some of your old high school classmates.
Yep, I saw some folks I hadn't seen in years, and it was great to have not one but two reunions of sorts, particularly one to honor a teacher that meant so much to us over the years, an educator in the best sense of the word, a truly great man, and it was wonderful to be part of that. And just to have some fun, it was a beautiful weekend, so we had a lot of outdoor things going on as well as a dinner. So, yeah, great time.
Now, did you have to wear those kind of badges that have your graduation picture on?
No,
everybody can see how different we all changed?
No, we didn't. I've been to reunions where we have had those, where you have your senior portrait.
That's not fair. That's just not fair.
But I have to tell you, I guess this is a sign that it's been a long time since I've been in high school because, well, it's a good thing there were name tags with some folks. You know, time does things.
Do you want to get a little more specific?
Yeah, let me write this down. Hold on.
Sam, you take note of this.
Time does things.
Sam, you will find out, my friend.
Does it say, hi, my name is Dave, or hi, my name is Schwanee? What did you write on the name tag?
I wrote Dave, and, I put Schwanee down as well. I got plenty of that, as I have since, like, fourth grade. So. it was we didn't have the name tags that said, hello, my name is Dave, what's yours? Have you seen those?
No.
You haven't seen those?
No. Oh.
No, didn't have those.
That's awful. That's awful.
I will also have to tell you that grandparenting is becoming the norm in my generation. More and more friends of mine becoming grandparents. And another subject that comes up, retirement.
Okay.
You know, 42 years after being out of high school, this is going to happen.
Those are good conversations.
It was good conversations. It was good conversations. And just on a very quick, serious note, remembered some people who are no longer with us. But all in all, it was great to see some people that I hadn't seen in a long time. We had people come in from all over the country, California, the Carolinas, other parts of the Midwest. It was a great time.
Now, what was the name of that teacher that you spoke of?
His name was Gordon Wilder, Mr. Wilder, and everybody just had such an affinity for the man, a real educator who always had time for questions, always had time to talk with you. He cared about his students, and, we see these teacher stories. You know, WGN-TV especially does, on a regular basis, these teachers that they focus on that care about the kids. I would hope that everybody would have at least one teacher like that.
I think everybody has.
I hope so.
I mean, I certainly have, and had a couple, actually. And I spoke previously about my late journalism professor.
Yes, your journalism professor at SIU.
Bill Ward, yeah. And my fifth grade teacher, Mr. Smith.
Mr. Smith.
Who, made me a bit more confident and outgoing. How does that sound?
Really?
Yeah.
So were you a little introverted, shall we say, prior to
introverted
to Mr. Smith?
Introverted, bookish. I mean, always into books.
Well, that comes in handy with your line of work.
he was just a great teacher, and you know, you know these teachers. It's this instinctive thing that you can pinpoint how much of a role they've played in character development.
Oh, yeah, without question. And I had a couple of professors that way in college as well in broadcasting. The one gentleman I can think of, if his door to his office was closed, it simply meant he wasn't there. If the it didn't mean that he was in some kind of a closed door meeting or he didn't want to see students. The door was always open when he was in the office. So
yes, well, I mean, we hear, you know, especially, and we'll be talking about it later this morning, about CPS and the Chicago Teachers Union and those kinds of issues. But, you know, teachers really are so important to a person's development. It's
critical.
It's absolutely critical.
It's critical, sure. Especially now with, you know, with things being as they are, you know, with all the diversions that students have with social media and other things going on. If you've got a teacher that can be a guide, be an anchor of some sort, that's critical.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and social media, my social media was blowing up yesterday after the Cubs ended their 11-game winning streak.
Yep. But what, 11 games?
Are you okay? Are you going to be okay?
I'm okay. I'll tell you what.
All right.
When I saw that grand slam that the Cardinals got, that just, you talk about taking the wind out of your sails there. And because it, coming off that high note of a 13-2 win the day before, to see them kind of cough it up there, it was kind of disappointing.
It was strange to see C.J. Edwards walk four people
right
in one inning. That rarely ever happens. They walked four guys.
Four people in one inning?
Yes.
Wow.
And then they took him out, and the guy they brought in, Joe Smith, unfortunately, one pitch, four runs come in. You know, it wasn't his fault that all the other guys were on, but it's a team game, and that's the second loss in the last 16 games. So 14-2 the last 16.
14-2, okay.
Yes.
And how many games are we ahead of St. Louis?
13.
13, okay.
On August 14th.
Yeah. How about it?
It could be worse. You could be a Cardinals fan.
Yes, and well, see, that was the payback on my social media for all of my Cardinal friends down in Southern Illinois for saying, you know, hey, I love all you guys, but let me enjoy this moment of that 13-2 win. And, of course, there's the payback the next day. But, you know, Sunday night baseball tonight with Cubs Cards doesn't get any better than that. And, I mean, it's felt like a playoff kind of weekend too, with all the Cardinal fans in town, and I mean a lot of good-natured ribbing, of course. But you know, it's after all the years of watching the Cardinals hand it to the Cubs. I mean, back when I was going to school at SIU Edwardsville, they would have college, you know, take us like a bus trip over to Busch Stadium, old Busch Stadium, and they would buy me a Cubs hat and a Cubs pennant. But then they would set fire to the pennant in the stands.
They didn't set fire to the hat, too, did they?
I think they tried a few times. But, yeah, the rivalries get a little bit tougher when you get that close. But
I can only imagine what would happen if social media, being what it is, as prevalent as it is today, was as prevalent back then.
Oh,
you know,
man.
The pictures of you being the odd man out, I guess you could say.
Yes, that's a very good way to put it. Well, yeah, let's go Cubs. Let's wrap up this series and let's send the Cardinals home.
Let's go USA too. Hopefully, you guys are getting a little Olympics in.
You know, a little bit. I don't know the personalities as much.
You know Michael Phelps.
Well, Michael
saw
Phelps,
the swimming.
Yes.
Yeah, he's done now.
Sure.
He competed in his last event last night.
23 gold medals.
23 gold medals all time.
I had also seen a story that, you know, he has said that that's it, but you never know. You know, at a point he could come back. But
think
you think
done.
This is it now?
He's probably done after 16 years of training. He's probably done.
I saw some headline. I don't know if it was the New York Times or whatever, but it was Superman takes off his cape, I think.
That's a fair way to put it.
Exactly. And I forget, it was Friday night. I forget who the female swimmer was, but I'm watching, you know, watching it in a restaurant, so I couldn't hear really the sound. But, you know, you're looking at these big screen, widescreen TVs, and you see the U.S. swimmer wins, and you see no other swimmers in the picture.
Katie Ledecky.
I mean, it's like I looked at the pool, and I'm going, where the heck is everybody else here? You know, it was just amazing.
So she wins that gold medal. It was the 800 meter. the second place finisher, the silver runner-up, was 11 seconds behind her.
11 seconds?
Yeah. So if she touches
that's
the wall.
That's why you didn't see anybody else.
Yeah. One, two, three, four, all the way to 11.
11 seconds. And she's, what, she's like 19 or something?
That sounds right.
But, I mean, how can you – now, you, this is the world's best, right? And how can you be that much better than everybody else?
She was born on March 17th, 1997. Shwani, 1997.
I heard. Yeah.
Hi, I'm 19.
Yeah, I heard.
Oh, well.
Got any other remarks, young man?
Time does things.
Time does things. I think that's the new bumper sticker for the Shwani Mobile. Yes, exactly.
Put it on the Zamboni.
Put it on the newsroom Zamboni. Time does things. Well, Dave's going to keep us up on all the news. Sam's here with the latest sports. We've got producer Sean here today to field your phone calls. We're at 312-981-7200. That's also our text number, 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin and on Twitter at @SundaySpin. And engineer Bob is here with me in the Allstate Showcase studio, and he's directing all the Cardinal fans over to White Sox Park. Remember, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com, and you can also get our podcast at iTunes by searching Rick Pearson. Coming up, we've got another great show today. After the 7:30 news update, we'll be speaking to Rebecca Shee. Rebecca is Executive Director of the Illinois Business Immigration Coalition. After the 8 o'clock news, my Tribune colleague Juan Perez Jr. will be back with us. Some big news going on this past week with Chicago Public Schools and its budget balancing. And then after the 8:30 news update, we'll be joined by Democratic State Senator Kwame Ryol. That's all coming up. This is the Sunday Spin. Good Sunday morning and welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, and it's time for our weekly spin through national politics. And of course, we begin with Donald Trump. His standing in the polls is rapidly slipping, including in some key swing states and even in some reliably red ones. Actually, even a new Democratic poll out this morning in Indiana has the race in reliably red Indiana as a dead heat between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Still, his rhetoric remains heated, just as when he made a questionable comment about Second Amendment supporters and Hillary Clinton.
Hillary wants to essentially abolish the Second Amendment. By the way, and if she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know. But I'll tell you what, that will be a horrible day. If Hillary gets to put her judges, right now we're tied. You see what's going on. We're tied because Scalia, this was not supposed to happen. Justice Scalia was going to be around for 10 more years at least. And this is what happens. That was a horrible thing. So now look at it. So Hillary essentially wants to abolish the Second Amendment.
So there you have that comment. And then the Republican presidential nominee went on to say that President Obama was the founder of the Islamic State.
In many respects, you know, they honor President Obama. ISIS is honoring President Obama. He is the founder of ISIS. He's the founder of ISIS. Okay? He's the founder. He founded ISIS. And I would say the co-founder would be Crooked Hillary Clinton. Co-founder, Crooked Hillary Clinton.
That's Donald Trump. Now, Trump was asked by conservative radio host Hugh Hewitt after that if Trump really meant that Obama created the vacuum that allowed ISIS to grow. But Trump doubled down on his founder comment. Then, even later, he accused the media of not understanding sarcasm. Then he told a rally that he really wasn't being that sarcastic. Now, in the meantime, the Clinton campaign and her supporters continued to go after Trump's criticism of a Gold Star family, including this ad from the Hillary Clinton-supporting super PAC Priorities USA featuring Michelle DeFord, an Oregon mother whose son was killed in combat.
A month after 9/11, I got a call from David, and he told me he was going into the National Guard. He was sent to Iraq to be a gunner on a Humvee. A car pulled up in the driveway, and three soldiers got out, and the sound of their boots as they came up those stairs will stay with me the rest of my life. You have moments when you really don't want to live anymore. It's a fate I would not wish on anybody. Not anybody. When I saw Donald Trump attack another Gold Star mother, I felt such a sense of outrage.
His wife, she was standing there. She had nothing to say.
I would like to tell Donald Trump what it feels like, the sense of emptiness that only losing a child can bring. Those people should be honored and treated with kindness for the rest of their life. And I don't think that Donald Trump will ever understand that.
Now, Trump has not really aired any ads in this general election campaign season, but even with the controversy over Trump's Second Amendment remarks, the NRA has launched a $3 million ad buy accusing Hillary Clinton of being a hypocrite when it comes to self-protection.
She's one of the wealthiest women in politics. Combined income, $30 million. Tours the world on private jets. Protected by armed guards for 30 years. But she doesn't believe in your right to keep a gun at home for self-defense.
I fully appreciate how hard life is for so many Americans today.
An out-of-touch hypocrite. She'd leave you defenseless. The NRA Political Victory Fund is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Also, news on the Hillary Clinton front is that the fact that the Obama administration is debating how to respond to congressional demands for the official report on Hillary Clinton's 3.5-hour interview at FBI headquarters. Some in government and outside government are raising concerns about giving lawmakers access to what may be politically sensitive records of the FBI's investigation into Hillary Clinton's private email system. Back to Donald Trump, the Trump campaign is launching a drive to recruit election observers, an online kind of registration, because, of course, the Donald Trump campaign and Trump himself is claiming that the general election is rigged. In fact, he told people in Pennsylvania that the only way he could lose Pennsylvania is if in certain sections of the state, quote, they cheat, unquote. Also, as far as Trump, a group of 50 national security experts labeled a Trump presidency as being dangerous for the country. But Trump told Fox Business News that he's not bothered by that criticism.
I wasn't using any of them, and they would have loved to have been involved with the campaign, but I wasn't using. I had no interest in using. Look where the country is now on national policy. Look what we are in defense. Look where we are. Look at the mess we're in, whether it's the Middle East or anyone else. And these were the people that have been there a long time, Washington establishment people that have been there for a long time. Look at the terrible job they've done. I hadn't planned on using any of these people. I guess for the most part, I haven't even spoken to any of these people because I like to speak to a new group. The old group was not doing it. Take a look at the Middle East. Take a look at the problems that we have. And the last people I want to use are the people that have been doing it for the last long period of time. So we, you know, they don't feel relevant because of that. And they form a group and they go out and they try and get some publicity for themselves. And they hope that somebody else other than Trump wins because that way they can get a job.
Now, Trump also came out with his economic tax-cutting message in Detroit, and that plan was savaged by Hillary Clinton.
His tax plans will give super big tax breaks to large corporations and the really wealthy, just like him and the guys who wrote the speech, right? He wants to roll back regulations on Wall Street. He wants to eliminate the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which has saved billions of dollars for Americans. He wants to basically just repackage trickle-down economics.
That's Hillary Clinton responding to Donald Trump's economic message. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now, The Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Welcome back to The Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue on a very gorgeous, gorgeous Sunday morning. Hillary Clinton and her running mate have released their income tax returns, and that's prompted Clinton to go after Trump in a new video over his refusal to release his own tax returns. And in this Clinton ad, it's kind of interesting because she uses Republicans who have criticized Trump about this, as well as Trump himself.
We will only really know if he's a real deal or a phony if he releases his tax returns.
The last 30 or 40 years, every candidate for president has released their tax returns, and I think Donald Trump should as well.
He doesn't want to do it because presumably there's something in there that is bad.
That's perhaps one more reason why we're not seeing his tax returns, because he is deeply involved in dealing with Russian oligarchs.
Either he's not anywhere near as wealthy as he says he is, or he hasn't been paying the kind of taxes we would expect him to pay, or perhaps he hasn't been giving money to the vets or to the disabled like he's been telling us he's been doing.
We don't know, and Donald can answer all of these questions simply by releasing his taxes as every other candidate for president has done.
So you know if you're running, at a minimum, probably you're going to have to show your returns.
But if you didn't see the tax returns, you'd think there's almost like something wrong. What's wrong?
That's the latest ad from the Hillary Clinton campaign. Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Rebecca Shee. She's executive director of the Illinois Business Immigration Coalition, and a big couple of weeks, I guess I would say, involving issues regarding immigration reform. Rebecca, thanks very much for joining me this morning.
Thank you so much for having me again, Rick.
Always a pleasure. I want to start out with by talking to you about the extension of the All Kids mm-hmm. legislation, and Governor Rauner recently signed that into law. What is All Kids? Why is it so important?
Sure. Thanks for the question. So the Illinois Business Immigration Coalition, along with the Healthy Illinois campaign, we're pushing for the extension of the All Kids health insurance, which would extend the coverage of health care to over 41,000 children in Illinois, regardless of their immigration status. And we were incredibly grateful that Governor Rauner did sign the bill, and that Speaker Madigan and Senate President Cullerton, along with Leader Redonio and Durkin, were in strong favor of this legislation and worked closely with advocates and leaders to make it a reality. So we're very thankful. This would allow 41,000, mostly low-income, and all children, regardless of their immigration status, to still have coverage up until 2019. So this extension was an incredible victory, and we're very grateful to all parties.
And it was a very strong bipartisan vote, too. I mean,
that's right.
You know, when you think of Springfield and you think of how things are deadlocked all the time and everything's along partisan lines, this did get overwhelming support. No, on both sides.
You're exactly right about that. From the Senate and the House, it passed with supermajority and incredible momentum. And, you know, we really have both sides to thank that this legislation, All Kids, didn't get caught up in the, the budget fights in Springfield. So,
well, and that leads to my next question. Mm-hmm. And you co-sponsored a roundtable conversation with Republicans, right. Republican lawmakers, Mario Diaz-Balart from the Miami area of Florida also was involved in this, but it was Illinois lawmakers, Congressman Dold from the North Shore, Senator Kirk, and Leader Redonio from mm-hmm. the Illinois State Senate. And it kind of marked how when you look at the national story of immigration and how, you know, basically that's been the Donald Trump driver here has right. been immigration and his views. But then you talk to the Illinois Republicans and it's largely a different story.
Right. No, absolutely. You know, we're hearing every day immigration is in the news. Donald Trump talking about building a wall and, you know, deporting all 11 million undocumented immigrants and even restricting legal immigration. And so very different voices, like you mentioned, in Illinois, led by Congressman Dole, Senator Kirk, Leader Redonio, saying that, look, you know, for our economy, for Illinois, for job creations, immigrants at the high and the low skill level contribute enormously. And you know, we're very happy to have Congressman Mario Diaz-Balart, who's really been on the House Republican side, the negotiator, you know, with Paul Ryan and together with Congressman Gutierrez to try to find a compromise to the middle so that we can get immigration reform. I think it was different also in the sense of, you know, we had Republicans who said we pick reform over Donald Trump. We pick common sense immigration reform. Over Donald Trump. So we hope, and we're having these conversations or part of conversations across the country with conservatives that pick reform over walls. So.
Well, and one of the things I thought was interesting was Leader Redonio saying that it really comes down to, in her view, is education and what education means in basically telling why immigration reform, comprehensive immigration reform, is important.
Right, right. Now that's really key, and it's something as we've been working together with employers across the state, agriculture, hospitals, energy companies, hospitality, that's you know, one of the key reasons and one of the key factors that we have to advance is to make sure good information gets distributed. For example, in Illinois, undocumented immigrants pay over $500 million in taxes in their income tax at the state and the federal level, out of which they don't get any benefits. And so they actually put in way more than they get out of into our Social Security system. And additionally, immigrants start small businesses at twice the rate that native-born, and many times employ American citizens. So, you know, immigrants don't take jobs away, as one of the myths that gets spread around, but rather that, you know, immigrants create jobs and they're, you know, engines of our economy. So I thought that was a really great point that Senator Redonio said. And one of the things that she also said was that this misinformation gets distributed on both sides, right?
Right.
So,
well, and another to that point, too, is the fact that, you know, and you look at Illinois and it's such a diverse state, geography very diverse as well. And I think that was part of one of the points is that, you know, I think there's different views of immigration depending upon which part of the state you're in.
Right.
And obviously, you know, in the more urban area where the population is more diverse, there's different attitudes than, say, if you go further downstate and into some of the rural areas. And quite frankly, those are some of the areas where, you know, Donald Trump could be successful in Illinois.
Right. And he was in the primary. A lot of those districts, you know, he won overwhelmingly. And we also found that, you know, employers in some of those districts, such as agriculture, universities, hospitals, these are some of the largest employers in central southern Illinois or in the collar counties, also have an urgent need for immigration reform. You know, with our universities and research institutions, in the University of Illinois, for example, 90% of the patents that are created every year have one or multiple immigrant founders. And in the agricultural industry, we know that on average about 70% of workers are undocumented. And, you know, we have farmers and larger employers who say they would like to hire legally, but natives are just not applying, right? Even though, you know, they pay above minimum wage and they get health insurance, but you know, native born do not want to spend, you know, 12 hours a day in the hot sun picking pumpkins or caring for pigs, right? And so it's really the backbone of some of our ag industry in Illinois are immigrants. So I think and we did see, right, like, for example, Adam Kinzinger has been very supportive on immigration reform in his district, right? Is Collar County, Central Illinois. You know, Aaron Schock, before he stepped down, was one of the first to come out in favor of comprehensive immigration reform. And so, you know, leaders in those areas, districts, outside of Chicago also realize the economic, the political, and the human need for immigration reform.
And you touched on this earlier, but I think one of the surprising things is just the issue of small businesses and the small business development, and you know, how many percent of small business startups are founded by immigrants.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. Immigrants start small businesses at twice the rate as native born. You know, we actually saw one of our members in Moline, Illinois, talking about how the economy there have energized and have grown because of Somali refugees, right, that have moved into the area because of their connection to the faith institutions, and as a result are, you know, working in the meatpacking plants, working, you know, in the ag fields, and in a way so that they, you know, these employers can keep growing their businesses rather than having to move over, right, to Iowa or to another state, or even, you know, outsource it to another country. And so, we see it at 1871, we see it at Tech Nexus, just the diversity of our tech startups. But I think the story that we, you know, are continued to hear and will tell more is in our small towns across America, how towns and villages are revitalized because of immigrants. So.
We're speaking with Rebecca Shee. She's the executive director of the Illinois Business Immigration Coalition. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, and joining me is Rebecca Shee, the executive director of the Illinois Business Immigration Coalition. We were talking about this roundtable that was held last week on the issue of immigration reform. And one of the more interesting comments came from one of the, Bill is a co-chair,
that's right.
William Kunkler, who is a longtime Republican financial guy, a bundler for Republican presidential candidates, and basically said, I'm not voting for Donald Trump, and cited the issue of how some of these controversial remarks that Trump has made, that he hopes that Trump gets humiliated, and that the numbers aren't trending in Trump's favor when it comes to immigrants in this country.
Right.
And I know, you know, that's kind of getting reflected in some of the polling that's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the latest polls that I've seen have Donald Trump at 13% among Hispanic, Asian, and immigrant voters, Hillary Clinton at over 75%. And as Bill, our co-chair, mentioned, you know, Mitt Romney lost, right, with 27% of the Hispanic vote and even less of the Asian American vote. And so, you know, now we're seeing Trump 50% less than what Romney got. And as we're also seeing across the country, I know that Rick earlier mentioned several states, you know, we're seeing two things happening with the Latino, Asian, and immigrant vote. Is that one, that there's been record naturalization, meaning immigrants that have legal permanent status are, I mean, literally running to become citizens in time to vote in November. We've actually seen a 30% increase this fiscal year compared to last fiscal year, meaning that if this trend continues by November, we'll see nearly a million new citizens and ready to vote by November, as well as we've seen a record voter registration, you know, especially in key states of Florida, Nevada, Colorado, North Carolina. In Florida alone, we've seen a increase of about 500,000 new Hispanic immigrants registering to vote, citizens who have registered to vote. You know, I think, you know, if these trends continue, and one of the things that we've been hearing from folks on the ground is that, you know, they're voting because of what they're hearing nationally from Trump. So,
and as Bill Kunkler said, that's they're registering in larger numbers, and they're not going to be voting for Donald Trump.
Right.
And so, you know, but I think, you know, let's go back to that issue of education. And you know, we talked a year ago about there was a forum over at Aurora University on immigration issues. And a lot of the issue of education and myth versus reality, I think, mm-hmm. is what it comes down to. It, you know, when you, as you touched on, the issue of immigration reform would only enhance tax revenues,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
even though you have undocumented immigrants paying taxes now. But, you know, a comprehensive immigration reform would enhance our tax revenue structure.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we all know, the pressure to our Social Security continues to grow, and undocumented immigrants in Illinois have annually paid over $500 million into our tax coffers at the state level, and nationally, the number tends to be the same for every state. And if we can have comprehensive immigration reform, where, you know, 11 million people are legalized, then, you know, we can grow that Social Security tax fund by trillions of dollars. You know, additionally, we've seen numbers from both the conservative, from many conservative think tanks that agree to those numbers, as well as just the growth in our GDP and, you know, millions of dollars that will be added to decrease our deficit. So, you know, study after study, from Partnership for New American Economy to Forward.us to, you know, we have a wonderful think tank in town, the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, have interviewed employers, have looked at, you know, these numbers at the high and the low skill level, and do verify that it is an economic plus to have comprehensive immigration reform.
And you also look at the GDP numbers here, mm-hmm. the numbers are astronomical. And then even going back to what we were saying about job creation, because small businesses are basically the foundation for job creation in this country. And I mean, that's where the jobs come from, are from small businesses.
Absolutely. You know, the largest employer in our state is hospitality, right? It's restaurants and their hotels. And something that the CEO of the Restaurant Association, who's on our board, Sam Toya, always talks about is that immigrants, you know, do not take jobs away from the native born. As he surveyed all of his employers in Illinois, what he's found is that that immigrants tend to and do, you know, take jobs that are on the, what he calls the back of the house, right? So they are the dishwashers, they are the, you know, they do takeout and they clean, right? And those are jobs, he says, you know, even, you know, with Chicago at $11 an hour, higher minimum wage, native born, you know, do not apply or do not want these jobs. And they'd rather be hostesses. They like to be waiters and waitresses and bartenders. So for Sam and his industry, the back of the house where immigrants work actually create opportunities and make possible the work of native born in the front of the house, right? So that they're actually complementary rather than competitive. And so I think that's important to keep note. And, you know, I think Chicago Tribune and Cranes did a really nice piece last year showing that how the communities of Little Village, right, is actually, you know, have hundreds and hundreds of small businesses, and mostly from Mexico. They contribute in terms of tax dollar into our state, second to Michigan Avenue. And the third, actually, community is Chinatown, with the small businesses. The bubble tea, the dim sum that you find in Chinatown is the third largest tax-generating revenue to our state.
So as we talk about this, though, mm-hmm. I mean, we still are faced with the fact that, and I know you had very much interest in Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House in Janesville, about mm-hmm. his winning his primary.
Right.
And Ryan and Luis Gutierrez, they've appeared together. They were at the City Club in Chicago not long ago,
right,
talking about comprehensive immigration reform. But yet now Paul Ryan is Speaker of the House. That was before he was Speaker. And now it's not on the agenda.
Right.
So how do groups like your group force considering this on the agenda?
Sure.
I mean, or do you believe that whatever after the election, it will get dealt with?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, the first thing is that we're very happy, and I think it reiterated our belief, right, that this will get done next year. The fact that Paul Ryan did crush his primary opponent, who was, praised by Trump, and also he had his primary opponent had many of the Trump supporters actively involved in his campaign. And it just showed us once more that, even conservative voters who are active in a Republican primary do not support Trump's immigration policies. So number one, I thought that was very good news, and it gave us hope for immigration reform in 2017. And I think that the second thing is, as we talked about the voter registration, the naturalization, kind of record-breaking numbers that we're seeing in the Hispanic, Asian, and immigrant voting electorate, I think that if this plays out and this trend continues, the political calculation will shift towards a need and will for comprehensive immigration reform in 2017, the way that we saw in 2012. And I think that the difference that we're going to see this time is that, and we will continuing with our partners across the country to hold our elected officials on both sides of the aisle accountable, right, for a bill. But also, even back in 2013, 2014, we had the votes. We knew we had the votes in the House with the majority of Democrats in support of immigration reform and, a smaller number of Republicans. But that added to 218. The problem was the bill didn't get called. And we believe and will work very, very hard to make sure that if that's the math again, that the bill does get called. And I think if the trend, electoral trend continues for November, that the politics will in many ways force that will. So,
Rebecca Shee, Executive Director of the Illinois Business Immigration Council, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Sure.
And thank you for wearing the cowboy hat.
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
I just want to give a plug that we do have an event with a Democrat delegation this September with Senator Durbin, Congresswoman Duckworth, and Congressman Gutierrez, and the Illinois Business Immigration Coalition. So, we are.
They can get more information at your website.
On our website, absolutely,
which is
IllinoisBIC.biz.
Rebecca, thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome to the second hour of the Sunday Spin this morning on a beautiful, beautiful Sunday morning here in downtown Chicago. We're learning that those cyber attacks on Democrats, the hacking believed to be caused by the Russians, was much more extensive than had been earlier believed. Now, House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi says the hacking was an act like the Watergate break-in.
This is an electronic Watergate. This is an electronic Watergate. This is a break-in. This is a break-in. And I think that we have to recognize what is happening here. Now, who the Russians broke in, who did they give the information to? I don't know. Who dumped it? I don't know. But I do know that this is a Watergate-like electronic break-in. And anyone who would exploit for the purpose of embarrassment or something like that is an accomplice to that.
Now, there's also concerns among the Hillary Clinton campaign that there's going to be more hacked emails being released. But there's also news that these hackers linked to Russian intelligence services may have also targeted some prominent Republican lawmakers in addition to their spying on the Democrats. It looks like among them may be the are purported campaign emails from the campaign staffs of Senator John McCain and Senator Lindsey Graham. So as well as emails from the 2012 GOP presidential candidate Michelle Bachmann and some Republican Party officials in several states. So that story is still developing. Well, also still developing is the continuing saga of the Chicago Public Schools, which we had the Forrest Claypool, the school CEO, formally releasing his budget proposal this past week. And joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio is my good friend Juan Perez Jr. He covers the Chicago Public Schools for your Chicago Tribune. Good morning.
And you know it must be busy if I'm here. I make this joke every time. I'm pretty sure. It must be busy if
I'm glad to have you back because, the schools are in the news.
Well, they are. And
they're always in the news.
It seems like it, doesn't it? Yeah. I mean,
as the guy who writes it.
What does the busy season end here? But, I mean, and I think you're going to see things obviously start to accelerate more with, district-operated schools getting back into session here not long from now. But like you said, the budget plan is out. It's not formally approved yet. The school board still has to weigh in on it here at the end of the week. I mean, at the end of the month, excuse me. That's normally a formality. I guess I don't see any reason to believe why this time would turn out any different, but there's going to be some budget hearings over the course of the week, and I'm curious to hear if the community does come out to have any commentary on this thing. What are they going to say?
Well, but let's face it, this is a budget plan that's based on something that the teachers union has already previously rejected.
Not to mention a bunch of money from the state that hasn't shown up yet.
Well, let's
yet again. But we could start with the teachers' contract.
Let's start
right?
with the teachers' contract.
You know, there's the. We talk again about the controversy over a pension pickup or what's a pay cut, what isn't, Forrest Claypool, chief executive of the Chicago Public Schools, has made very clear that this contract is going to be contingent on some types of concessions from the Chicago Teachers Union. They would put forth the argument that, listen, this contract that we floated to you guys back in January, that a union bargaining team ultimately rejected, Claypool's going to argue that, listen, this framework is something that we can work within. There are some levers here and there that we can pull to kind of make this come to a, something that's amenable for everybody. But the framework of that deal, of this January 29th contract proposal, is going to have to be what the school district needs to get through its budget year. is the union going to give up the pickup? Right away? No, I mean, Karen Lewis made very clear that, if you install a 7% pay cut on us, we will strike. That's paraphrasing. That's not a direct quote. But they've been pretty consistent in their public communication that, a full 7% isn't going to fly. And Claypool says they haven't pulled the pickup yet. If they do so unilaterally, I'm pretty sure that would provoke the union to... probably walk out. At least that's what they've said.
And they have been less than certain on trying to establish like a strike date or a strike deadline.
They say they'll be, Karen made pretty clear that teachers are going to be in classrooms on the first day of school.
But she also says we're not going to go another year without, we're not going to go a year without a contract.
And so what does that mean, right? That's what I'm left trying to figure out is what are they trying to say here? Are they imposing a deadline? I haven't heard one yet, and I don't think, they're ready to say one publicly yet. But, they're also making pretty clear that, we're not going to let this drag out for another year. So, what kind of leverage are they going to pull? How are they going to be able to wedge the, along the timing of negotiations to a point where something happens? That's what I'm still not quite clear on yet. I've got a lot of questions on that.
Well, but with that leverage, though, is their belief, and Karen Lewis has said as much, that, the union believes it's in a strong bargaining position because that of the weakness in their mind, the political weakness of Mayor Rahm Emanuel.
He can't, of all of the things that is on this man's plate right now over at City Hall, of all of the crises that, the piles of paper, figuratively that are piling up on the desk, you don't need another teacher strike on top of it, right? Can you imagine?
Rahm,
the optics of it.
But that's how a lot of people really, look at the launch of his first term as mayor is right into a teacher strike.
You know, and his is does the administration have a little bit of a different world? I don't know that their worldview has changed, but I mean, I don't know if the mayor's administration wants to really be in a position where it's, you know, directly antagonizing the Chicago Teachers Union and working into a situation where it's all out war. I don't think they're looking for that. Although I'm sure there are some people in the city who would really like to, you know.
Quite frankly, the state. I mean, you basically heard Governor Rauner previously say that he thought that Emanuel gave in to the teachers union last time, and that he had wished he had, that the mayor had a stronger backbone in dealing with the teachers union.
Absolutely. So, you know, where does that leave all of us? I mean, does you know, what should everybody ask me? You know, we need to be concerned with what parents should be worried about. And I think the administration and the union, to a certain extent, have both put forward this idea that, listen, you know, schools are going to be open on time. You know, we're going to be there. You know, it's going to get off to the start that it needs to get off on. But then, you know, my suspicion is that just after school starts, you're going to see negotiations starting to get intense again. And you'll start to see some of this tennis match that we've been so accustomed to watching here over the course of the past 2 years.
Sure, because schools will be in session then, and so that kind of amps the pressure.
Maybe that's your leverage too, right?
I would think so.
You get the school year started, and you don't want to shove that off the rails. It's going to happen again. We're coming back into tis the season, right?
Tis the season. We're speaking to Juan Perez Jr. He's the Chicago Public Schools reporter, my colleague at the Chicago Tribune. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the All-State Showcase Studio on North Michigan Avenue, Tribune Tower. Beautiful Sunday weather out there. I was just out on the Storm Center patio, and actually just a gorgeous, gorgeous Sunday. Dave, I wanted to mention this bill that Governor Rauner vetoed.
Yes.
That was on Friday. This was a bill that was aimed at making voter registration automatic in Illinois. I don't know if you're familiar with this. We have a system right now when you like go to renew your driver's license or apply for a driver's license, they'll ask you, do you want to register to vote? This would actually be kind of the obverse of that. This bill would have made it automatic that you're registered to vote, and then you would have to tell the election authorities that you didn't want to register.
So this bill has now been vetoed.
But it was vetoed. It was vetoed. And it would have been taken effect in January of 2018. And it would not just have been if you go to get a driver's license. If you went to any kind of like a social service agency and needed any kind of state assistance, you'd automatically be registered to vote. And I mean, there's a lot of advocates for this, and some people have said, well, this could, you know, clean up the voting rolls, because one of the things is, instead of, you know, people with old addresses and they don't change their voting address and they're struck from the books. This way, when you get a new driver's license or you update your driver's license, the update would automatically follow mm-hmm. with your address mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah.
But the problem that the governor sees in this is, one, there's a federal law that says you have to, as a potential voter, you have to attest or sign that you want to register to vote. And there wouldn't exist in this. And so you have that issue. And, you know, then again, this would put the State Board of Elections, the onus on them to determine who is a legitimate voter or not.
Yeah, well, first of all, I would think with the voter apathy that we're facing locally, statewide, federally, that you would want, you know, more and more people to be registered to vote. Secondly, I'm wondering if there is any a push to override this veto. Idea there?
And that brings the interesting question, because the bill passed overwhelmingly. It passed 86-30. In the House.
Wow.
And 50-7 in the Senate.
Yes. Senate.
So, you know, yes, there were concerns, some minor concerns expressed about, you know, does this open up a greater potential for voter fraud or that kind of thing? But supporters, of which there are many, say that they're going to push for an override. Cook County Clerk David Orr is among the supporters of this, that they're going to push for an override. I think because of the fact that you have a Republican governor who vetoed it, that you're not that will fall off some of the Republican support that existed for this bill. And, you know, are there real concerns here? The governor cites some potential ones, including, you know, here the State Board of Elections to determine the legitimacy of a voter. He points out that the State Board of Elections doesn't even have access to citizenship records, and that the Secretary of State, with the new driver's licenses that will be coming, which I think you've heard about, where you'll be going to the the local Secretary of State's office to get your driver's license renewed. Instead of, as you usually do, you sit there for the goofy picture, you get the new license, and you walk away. They'll mail you the license.
They'll mail you the license, yeah.
Because they're going to be doing all of these kind of federal ID checks. And so Rauner is suggesting that, you know, if in the case of the driver's licenses under this law, why not take advantage of that as a citizenship check? And if someone applies who isn't eligible to vote based on citizenship, then just deny the application there instead of going all the way to the State Board of Elections, who doesn't get citizenship records, and let them decide.
By the way, I'll give you a full report next week. Is driver's license renewed tomorrow, so I'll give you a full report as to what takes place.
Well, you're picked I thought they were closed on some Mondays.
Not the downtown here, they're not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but you're also picking a good time in the middle of the month, because it's normally the first of the month is always kind of the busiest day.
Sure. Yeah.
Are they going to be able to override this thing? I don't know. I mean, there's a big push, and some of the supporters have basically said they don't buy the governor's rationale on this, and that they believe that this is a politically motivated, because it would take effect in January of 2018, and that's when the governor's race is.
The governor's race is up for he would be up for re-election for a second term. Would this be talked about, do you think, as early as the veto session, or were they going to wait till next year in the spring session?
Well, I think it will. I mean, that's why it's the veto session. So I do think
they
that
would
the,
do it.
They would actually talk about this then.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, I was kind of surprised at some of the groups in support just kind of, you know, basically throwing the blame on Rauner. And saying it was politically motivated, instead of, because Rauner said, well, hey, let's talk, kind of thing. I don't know what's going to happen with this. Democracy, a group called Just Democracy Illinois, said in its statement, and this is like an umbrella group for 50 organizations, that the timeline for automatic voter registration should not be pushed back based on political calculations, and we will not accept stall tactics that delay implementation any further. So, you know, I think you can tell right there where some of these groups are at on this. But a very kind of interesting proposal here. There are actually five other states, I believe, that have this kind of automatic voter registration that exists. And, this has been... And that's actually, that's all been adopted in the last 18 months or so.
Yeah, I wonder if it's working well for them. Have you heard one way or another? Any of the states are having some success with this?
I think it's too soon to tell, because, you know, the ultimate outcome will depend on, you know, what voting has taken place there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you've got... So, and you've got that issue too. And of course, there's this thing called Real ID, and that's part of what's prompting this change with the Secretary of State and the driver's licenses. So I'm not even sure if that has kicked in yet, for that you'll be able to get your driver's license when you come out of there.
Well, as I say, I'll give you a full report next week on what happens.
You may want to bring donuts or something to, you know, with some of the lines that
well,
you
know,
got there.
I have to tell you, I was at the Secretary of State's office in the Thompson Center just to get a gauge, more or less, of the busyness of it, the traffic going in and out there. And there were people outside the office sitting down and waiting. This was, I don't remember what day it was, sometime last week. And I thought, well, the earlier the better, perhaps, to show up there.
The line was outside.
The line not only was outside, but people were sitting outside, reading books, looking at their laptops, you know, waiting to get in because all of the chairs in the waiting room there were full.
Wow. So you, what's on your reading list these days, Dave? Wow.
I could very easily take a couple of things. I did buy some Ernest Hemingway books when we were at his house in Florida.
Right.
So I'll take those along. Some of those are not easy reads, but lengthy reads. And that might be a lengthy wait, but we'll see. We'll see. As I say, I'll give you a full report.
Oh, man. Well, so that means you had your birthday.
Not yet.
Oh, you're beating your birthday.
I'm beating my birthday.
So when's your birthday?
Yeah. A week from tomorrow.
Ah.
Week from tomorrow.
All right. So we have to plan that into our schedule for next
Sunday. We'll talk about it next Sunday, yes.
Why is everything dealing with age today with you?
That's a good question. That's a good question. I'm not sure. Now, let me ask you this. You are going to our state capitol this coming week.
Oh, you are going to bring this up,
aren't
you?
Yes. You didn't seem too excited about it when we were talking off the air this morning. But State Fair Day. Political days for you down there.
Yes, state fair political days. There's Governor's Day or Republican Day at the fair, and then there's the Democrat Day at the fair that are back-to-back on Wednesday and Thursday. And, yes, I'll be heading off to the state capitol, and this would be my 34th annual visit to the Illinois State Fairgrounds.
The 34th annual visit. Tell me, have political days been a part of the fair since its inception, since it's been around, you know?
As far as I know, and long before me, and actually back in the day, you would have various political bosses they'd basically charter train cars to bring supporters down to Springfield.
Oh, is that right?
And buses, that's still being done by some candidates where they will, you know, have bus people in from Chicago for a day at the fair. And, you know, you've got that kind of stuff that goes on. But, you know, we can talk more about this. I'm going to actually take a quick break here. We'll be back with more of the Sunday Spin right after this. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. And kind of talking about these issues of voting rights and the issue of renewing driver's licenses. And actually, we've got a call from Sam about the driver's license issue. Sam, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Well, how you doing? I'm glad to talk to you.
Thank you for coming on. You had some issues with getting your driver's license?
Oh, definitely. See, when you go down to renew your driver's license, well, actually, out of state to bring it into Illinois, okay? Then I go down to DMV over here, and they say, well, you got to have your birth certificate, you got to have a Social Security card, and two proofs of identification of who you are. So no problem at all, okay? So then I run down to the Bridgeview Courthouse, and I tell them that this is what I need. I give my driver's license from out of state. You want to go to the state? Is that important?
No, that's okay. That's all right.
Okay. And we can't give it to you. What do you mean you can't give it to me? I got 3 days to get this done now. Wednesday's my birthday, same as Petey Vasquez. Okay? So anyhow, they said, no, we can't give it to you. I said, well, I need to see a supervisor. I only got 3 more days to do this. They said, well, we can't give it to you. I said, why not? Because the name is different. The first name is different from what's on your birth certificate. I said, well, see, when I was born, my first name was Salvatore, And because I grew up in an Irish neighborhood, well, you know, you get beat up in a lot of it. So anyhow, it was him.
Oh.
So anyhow, they won't give me my birth certificate because I've grown up. I was drafted by Sam. They didn't send it to Salvatore. They sent it to Sam. I drafted it, did my 2 years, whatever. Everybody from where I grew up till now. Now I go to the birth certificate, play vital statistics, I guess you call it, and they won't give it to me, and now I can't get my driver's license.
All right, Sam, I feel for you. I'm not exactly sure what I could recommend there, except maybe to have a talk with your elected representative, your state senator or your state representative, and perhaps, I mean, that, frankly, that's why we pay the salaries. They're supposed to do constituent services, and that's an important constituent service, and so I would definitely reach out and contact them. We've also got a call from Mike. Mike? Welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Well, good morning, Rick. Dave does not want to go to the Secretary of State's facility in the Thompson Center.
Okay.
Where he wants to go is to the Driver's License Express Center, which is in the lower level of the 69 West Washington building, and which is the Cook County office building.
That's a good idea.
It goes much faster, and you're not involved with all the people who are dealing with automobile licensing issues.
It's purely driver's licenses.
No, he's right. I forgot about that. Yes, thank you. Thank you for that.
Mike, valuable tip. Appreciate
you're
that.
Right.
69 Washington building is purely driver's license.
Yeah, I know where that is. Thank you. I'd forgotten about that office. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Mike. And also on our text line, Dave, it's also take a trip downstate and get your license renewed in short order at some of the downstate driver's facilities. You like to go on those road trips.
I'll go down to Shawneetown.
Well,
Murfreesboro.
Alito?
Alito, yeah. Well, that's west, but yeah.
Right.
Alito, Galesburg.
Right. Canton.
Yeah. Canton. Yeah, I've got friends in Canton.
Monmouth.
I can go there. Monmouth.
Yeah. Get on the road, and you could give us a road tour of driver's license facilities.
I wonder if Atlanta, Illinois, has a driver's license bureau. We were on with Dave Plyer's show earlier this morning.
Oh, Route 66?
Route 66, mm-hmm. And they were mentioning the stop in Atlanta. Real, real small place in the Bloomington area there. They may have a driver's license facility.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. No.
But that's just south.
Worth the road trip to find out.
That's just south of Bloomington.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I know from my mile marker bingo on I-55 for all the trips that I've made from Chicago to Springfield.
Not far from McLean.
Correct. Correct. Mm-hmm. Which I believe was one of the, well, that's where the Dixie truck stop, right?
Oh, the immortal Dixie truck stop.
Right.
Yeah.
Which for a while was the last stoplight in completion of I-55.
Oh, I didn't know.
Imagine that, this big truck stop, which might have curried some political favor that that's why there was, before I-55 was completed, that was where you had to stop, was right outside the Dixie truck stop.
Right at the stop there. That's a busy intersection, too, I'll tell you. They need more than a stop sign there. That's a busy intersection. You've got traffic coming from all ways when you're trying to get in there.
No, and actually, they have a Route 66 museum.
Oh, there. Yeah. Oh, they do. Yeah. Right in the whole area there where they have a store and really facilities for truck drivers, showers and that sort of thing. There's a Route 66 museum, some great old pictures from that whole area there. Bloomington, Pontiac, terrific place to go.
You know, I do have to do that old 66 kind of, you know, get off the highway kind of thing. And
well, now you know you have a perfect opportunity now if you're headed down there.
Oh, but it's I have to get down there so quickly because this is the greatest, you know, state fair that ever existed. I'm just worried about it, whether it's going
may it
to
may it be cool and dry for you.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. I hope it dries out because I was looking Friday night at some of the pictures and some of the serious flooding that went on down there.
Yeah, the latest story we have says that some of the camping areas that were there I just had the story here. Hang on a second. Some of the camping areas in the state fairgrounds had been restricted and no injuries reported, but the Red Cross was involved in helping some campers there because of the...
Some of the vendors camped there, and those campers that they, you know, sleep in, they started floating. I mean, in some of the parking areas, the water was over 5 feet high. And, you know, that's 5 inches of rain in 2 hours Friday night in Springfield.
Utter deluge.
Yeah, so I'm just hoping the place dries out. But it's never cool in August in Springfield
not
at
there.
The Illinois State Fairgrounds. No.
Not there.
No, you can tell which way the wind's blowing by the dust that blows off the State Fair Midway.
Well, as I say, I hope you remain cool and dry. I think we'll both have stories for next week.
It sounds like it.
You from the State Fair, me from the Secretary of State's office.
I'll bring you an elephant ear. How about that?
and a fried Pepsi.
A fried Pepsi.
Bring a fried Pepsi.
How can anybody eat all that deep fried stuff when it's 90 degrees out and the humidity is 88%.
Real easy. Just open up.
Oh, in chorus.